appreciate the opportunity that was given to me to be able to speak to you this morning. What I'm going to talk about is something that I don't have any or know of any problems in the congregation here, but it's something that we'd need to be made aware of because it can arise from time to time. When Brother Kyle Kimball was here 2 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago tomorrow, he brought a lesson on authority. Well, this morning I want to talk about rebellion to authority, and I think it's a biblical topic. I think we can see some examples in the Old Testament and apply them to our worship to God today. It can crop up in the church, and I've been in churches where it did crop up. But again, I know of no problems here locally that are of consequence. When we talk about rebellion, we're going to use an Old Testament or some Old Testament examples to lay the basis for the lesson, and then apply what we learned from the Old Testament to New Testament teachings. The children of Israel had spent something like 215 years in Egyptian captivity before Moses led them out of captivity and toward the promised land. Due to the unfaithfulness of the people of Israel, unfaithfulness to God, they were made to wander in the wilderness for 40 years. They were a complaining and a dissatisfied people, as we're going to see here in a moment. In many cases, the complaints that the children of Israel had actually began before they ever crossed the Red Sea. But we're going to start a little bit later. We're going to start from the time that they leave Sinai and show how they complained. Every one of the Israelites who was above 20 years of age that crossed through the Red Sea died in the wilderness. Every one of them, with the exception of Caleb and Joshua. The real problem with the people of Israel was their lack, was not just their lack of faith, but was their faithfulness or faithless belief in God. The Hebrew writer says in Hebrews 3, verses 16 through 19, "For who, having heard, rebelled? Indeed, was it not all who came out of Egypt, led by Moses, now with whom was he angry 40 years? Was it not with those who sinned, whose corpses fell in the wilderness, and to whom he did not, or and to whom did he swear that they would not enter into his rest, but to those who did not obey?" So we see that they could not enter in because of unbelief. God had shown the people of Israel many astounding things. Just look at the plagues that he demonstrated in Egypt before they left. And yet, when they got to the Red Sea and they looked back and saw Pharaoh's army coming, they lost their faith. If we follow the events from Sinai, we see over in Numbers 11 and verse 1, and by the way, we're going to spend most of the time in the book of Numbers. But in Numbers 11 and verse 1, that they were a very complaining type people. "Now when the people complained, it displeased the Lord. The Lord heard it, and his anger was aroused. So the fire of the Lord burned among them and consumed some of the some in the outskirts of the camp. But you know, it wasn't just the people of Israel that was doing the complaining. We turn over to the next chapter, Numbers 12 and verses 1 and 2. And we find where Miriam and Aaron also complained against Moses. Then Miriam and Aaron spoke against Moses because of the Ethiopian woman whom he had married, for he had married an Ethiopian woman. So they said, "Has the Lord indeed spoken only through Moses?" Now keep that in mind. Keep that in mind. They're blaming the wife of Moses, or the fact that he married an Ethiopian woman. But keep in mind, has the Lord indeed spoken only through Moses? Has he not spoken through us also? And the Lord heard it. A little bit of jealousy there. The real problem wasn't with the Ethiopian woman. The real problem was with the authority of Moses. Turn over to the next chapter of Numbers. We find the faithless report of the 10 spies after their surveillance of the land of Canaan. In verses 31 through 33, the writer says, "But the men who had gone up with him said, 'We are not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we.' And they gave the children of Israel a bad report of the land which they had spied out, saying, 'The land through which we have gone as spies is a land that devours its inhabitants. And all the people whom we saw in it are men of great stature. There we saw giants.'" The descendants of Anak came from the giants. "And we were like grasshoppers in our own sight, and so we were in their sight." We can't take it. It's a wonderful land, but we can't take it. And this is the same people that saw God crush Pharaoh's army in the Red Sea. This is the same people that knew of the promise that God made to Abraham and that he would give them the land of Canaan. There was continued murmuring of the people in Numbers 14, and Joshua gave them a stern warning. He said in verse 9 of chapter 14, "Only do not rebel against the Lord, nor fear the people of the land, for they are our bread. Their protection has departed from them. The Lord is with us. Do not fear them." Our lesson opens with a full-scale rebellion against the authority of Moses and against the priesthood of Aaron. And we ought to continuously remind ourselves of the dangers of dissatisfaction, the dangers of discontentment, and look at the children of Israel as examples. First of all, they had a mindset of murmuring and complaining. Secondly, they went into rebellion against God's delegated authority. They went against Moses. And thirdly, they went into rebellion against God. Excuse me. Turn to the 16th chapter of Numbers now. Lengthy reading, the first 11 verses. "Now Korah, the son of Issachar, the son of Kohath, the son of Levi, and Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, and On, the son of Peleth, sons of Reuben, took men. And they rose up before Moses with some of the children of Israel, 250 leaders of the congregation, representatives of the congregation, men of renown. They gathered together against Moses and Aaron and said to them, "You take too much upon yourselves, for all the congregation is holy, every one of them, and the Lord is among them. Why then do you exalt yourselves above the assembly of the Lord?" So when Moses heard it, he fell on his face, and he spoke to Korah and all his company, saying, "Tomorrow morning the Lord will show who is his and who is holy, and will cause him to come near to him. That one whom he chooses, he will cause to come near to him. Do this: take censers, Korah, and all your company. Put fire in them and put incense in them before the Lord tomorrow, and it shall be that the man whom the Lord chooses is the Holy One. You take too much upon yourselves, you son of Levi." Then Moses said to Korah, "Hear now, you sons of Levi, it is a small thing to you that the God of Israel has separated you from the congregation of Israel to bring you near to himself, to do the work of the tabernacle of the Lord and to stand before the congregation to serve them. And that he has brought you near to himself, you and all your brethren, the sons of Levi, with you. And are you seeking the priesthood also? Therefore, you and all your company are gathered together against the Lord. And what is Aaron that you complain against him?" So in this passage, we first of all want to take a look at the characteristics of Moses' leadership. The people, when they rebelled against Moses' authority, hurt him. Notice in verse 4, he fell upon his face. He was hurt because they had turned against him. He was hurt. This is not the same Moses that we read about in Exodus 2 who killed the Egyptian. But Moses is hurt because the people whom he is leading, because God told him to lead the people out of Egypt, are turning against him. He fell on his face. What happens in the world today when someone wants to criticize a leader? We see it in politics in Washington, D.C. You criticize one of the leaders up there, and what do? They turn against you. Boom. It's not uncommon. Say something against the leader, and they want to turn against you, jump down your throat for rebelling against them. Moses was hurt, but he did not jump down their throat. He tried to reason with them. He tried to show the people that they should be following God in all things, just as he was. This characteristic shows that Moses was intent upon doing God's will, no matter what the people complained about. And he didn't let his pride get in the way, as so many people do today. When the people wouldn't listen to his teachings, he tried to get them to turn back to God. In verse 8, he said, "Hear now, you sons of Levi." He spoke to Korah. This rebellion wasn't against Moses, but it was against God. Moses tried to get them to realize the gravity of their rebellion. Yet even here, he did not rule with an iron fist. Drop it down, same chapter, to verse 21. Moses continues, "Separate yourselves from among this congregation that I may consume them in a moment." Then they fell on their faces and said, "O God, the God of the spirits of all flesh, shall one man sin and you be angry with all the congregation?" So the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the congregation, saying, get away from the tents of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram." Then Moses rose and went to Dathan and Abiram, and the elders of Israel followed, and he spoke to the congregation, saying, "Depart now from the tents of these wicked men. Touch nothing of theirs, lest you be consumed in all their sins." So they got away from around the tents of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. And Dathan and Abiram came out and stood in the door of their tents with their wives, their sons, and their little children. And Moses said, "By this you shall know that the Lord has sent me to do all of these works, for I have not done them of my own will. If these men die naturally like all men, or if they are visited by the common fate of all men, then the Lord has not sent me. But if the Lord creates a new thing and the earth opens its mouth and swallows them up with all that belongs to them and they go down alive into the pit, then you will understand that these men have rejected the Lord." Even though they may have been right in what they said to some degree, the congregation was wrong. Moses never tried to force them to obey. He never attacked them individually. He pleaded with them. He always pleaded with them patiently, because he knew that he couldn't force obedience. Moses remained faithful and attempted to bring those in rebellion back to God. Now let's take a look at what has transpired in the 16th chapter and see what lessons we can learn from the congregation in Israel. First of all, we see the awfulness that is inherent in division. If these men had succeeded in their rebellion, there would have been a distinct division within the nation of Israel. Some would have followed those that were causing division. And it's always the case when those rebelling against God are the ones that cause the division. As it was, however, Israel, for the most part, was united upon the one true God. But notice now we've got 3 men named and 250 leaders of the congregation that have broken away. This points up one of the most important lessons that people in the Lord's church will ever learn. And that is that there's a danger of allowing discontent, complaining, dissatisfaction to rule the day, because it's going to lead to rebellion against God and it's going to cause factional attitudes. It happens within churches. As I mentioned a moment ago, I've been in churches where it did happen. It should be pointed out that the subjects of our study were actually factionist. Korah, Abithan were factionist. They were people who might have been correct a little bit, but they didn't have the whole picture. They said, after all, back up in verse 3, they said, all the congregation are holy, every one of them, and the Lord is among them. Is that not correct? Were they not correct? What they said was true, but did not rely upon what they were saying to establish their conclusion. God had specified functions for both Moses and for Aaron. And that's really what was causing the division. There's factions within churches of Christ today, and in some degree it's based upon Galatians 3, verse 28. In Galatians 3, verse 28, the Apostle Paul says, there's neither Jew nor Greek, there's neither slave nor free, there's neither male nor female, for you are all one in Christ Jesus. A man comes along today in some churches and says all Christians stand upon the same level. Do you disagree with that? Isn't that a true statement? Just like the statement that Cora and them was making? It is a true statement. All Christians stand upon the same level. Galatians 3, verse 28 says so. But now they want to say, well, because we're all of the same level, we're all on the same level, why can't women do the same thing in the church that the man can do? We're all level. We're all even. Why can't women be elders? Why can't women take a part in the worship service? The answer is the same as God gave to Israel. For the same reason every Israelite could not do what Moses and Aaron were told to do. That's the same reason the women can't do in the church what the man can do. For a clear picture of what division can cause, let's take a look at the church in Corinth. Paul's first letter to the church at Corinth has a number of instances where he addresses the division. Over in chapter 12, verse 25, he says that there should be no schism in the body, but that members should have the same care one for another. When we read the word schism, as Paul uses it here, we're talking about a division. And in some cases, a division or a schism would not necessarily involve a group pulling away from another part of the church. Sometimes they exist in a congregation when you find uncharitable or unlovable attitudes, discontentment, discord, fights, feuds, word battles, backbiting, and so forth. Now notice what the church in Corinth was doing. They came together and worshiped together. But there were still divisions in them. He said over in chapter 1, verse 10, Now I plead with you, brethren, by the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, that you all speak the same thing, that there be no divisions among you, but that you be perfectly joined together in the same mind and the same judgment. They didn't do it. They didn't want to do it. Until Paul brought it to their attention. And we read in 2 Corinthians where they straightened their problems out. But also, we read about a problem in number 16, where there is power of personalities. The Bible reveals powerful personalities known for their discontent and rebellion against God's delegated authority. We mentioned earlier that Miriam and Aaron, sister and brother of Moses, rebelled against Moses. They used his wife as an example, but actually were rebelling against the authority that Moses had. And in chapter 16, verse 2, we noticed how the leaders of the congregation of the children of Israel caused the same problem. They rose up before Moses with some of the children of Israel, 250 leaders of the congregation. Leaders of the congregation. Representatives of the congregation. Men of renown. It's happened in the church too. Leaders, supposedly upstanding men of the congregation, taking on themselves authority that they have not been given. John writes about it in 3 John verses 9 and 10. He said, I wrote to the church, but Diotrephes, who loves to have the preeminence among them, does not receive us. Therefore, if I come, I will call to mind his deeds which he does, prating against us with malicious words, and not content with that, he himself does not receive the brethren, and forbids those who wish to, putting them out of the church. What give Diotrephes that authority? He took it upon himself. Common practice is evidenced in each of these instances of rebellious personalities. You may have a few stepping out to form up a rebellion and others falling in line behind them. When division exists in a church, tension mounts, pressures build up, continue to build up until someone lights the proverbial match that explodes the thing, you have a division. I've mentioned before from the pulpit about a church over in Mississippi that had two elders. They needed a new roof on their building. One of the elders had a group that followed him, and they wanted asphalt composite type shingles on it. The other elder in the group that followed after him wanted a tin roof so they could hear the rain as it made its little beat upon the roof. A division taking place in that church. So what do? They get a new roof. One side was 10, one side was composite. We've got a responsibility as Christians in this congregation, and the same is true with Christians in all congregations, that if someone is trying to influence a rebellion against God, then we're not to follow them. We're not to support them. And if we do, then we're sinning. We need to learn to respect God's way. Unfortunately, no one who rebels against God ever views himself as doing wrong. They never view themselves as going against God. A group may rise up in a congregation where there's no falling away from God's truth, either in the pulpit or in the eldership, and split the church wide open and feel that they're doing right by doing so. The men of Israel felt that that was true when they rebelled against Moses and Aaron. What they said was true, but the conclusion was wrong. They wanted to change God's way since they had rejected the priesthood that was appointed by God. And they thought that their complaint was merely against Moses and Aaron. They didn't look at the whole picture. Moses said to them, "Therefore you and all your company are gathered together against the Lord. And what is Aaron that you complain against him?" You're complaining against God. These men were rebelling, they thought, against Moses and Aaron, but they were rebelling against God. Anytime we rebel against God's authority, we're rebelling against God, period. We're rebelling against God. We need to respect God's way. God's way was to put elders in every church. And we need to be submissive to those elders. The Hebrew writer says, Hebrews 13, verse 17, obey those who rule over you and be submissive, for they watch out for your souls as those who give account. Let them do so with joy and not with grief, for that would be unprofitable for you. We need to be submissive to the elders that have oversight, that are looking out for our souls. We need to respect those men and to lift up their hands and support them. There's no authority in an individual elder. The instructions are for the eldership, for them as a whole. And these leaders should recognize their responsibility for the flock's welfare. They should see that we're being taught the truth. They should see that error does not enter into our midst. They are to rule, but they're not to rule with an iron hand, but to enforce God's laws and to expedite matters that need taken care of. And without a doubt, some will remove themselves from salvation to condemnation because they did not submit to the eldership. We ought to learn a lesson. We ought to learn a lesson from things that happened in the past, things that God's people did. And I think the examples that we saw from the children of Israel rebelling against God should be something that we learn from and not rebel against God's authority. In the text, we have a clear, forceful, and unforgettable demonstration of God's attitude towards rebellion against his delegated authority. This simply applies to the authority of elders in the local congregation, just as much as it did to Moses and Aaron back in the Old Testament times. Simple contentment with God's way will produce happiness, it will produce unity, and it will produce growth in the congregation. If there's any here this morning who has not named the name of Christ, we want you to consider your stance in life. God has given a simple plan of salvation. Hear the word, believe it. Believe that Jesus Christ is his Son. That Jesus Christ came to this earth and lived a perfect life, died upon the cross as we commemorated this morning around the table. Given his life for the sins of all mankind. If you do that, believe, confess that he is the Christ, be buried with him in baptism where you come in contact with the blood, and be raised to walk in the newness of life, then we ask that you consider your position. Have you done that? Or if you've done that and you've fallen away, then we ask that you consider that also. If it's of a public nature and needs to be made known publicly, then we ask that you consider it. Come as we stand and sing a song of invitation.